It is just a couple minutes after 6:30 and calling the regular meeting of the East Bay Charter Township Board. Regular meeting for Monday, February 12th, to order, and we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. I always think that's pretty cool. We have a job where we start with the Pledge of Allegiance. That's not every job, you know. Anyway. Okay, Ann, we'll do roll call attendance.
Sure. Walters?
Present.
Lyle?
Here.
Forte?
Here.
Henschel?
Here.
Merrill?
Here.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Friend?
Here. Okay, presentation of the agenda. Couple things. You will note that we had a couple things added on that are on your table. We have the surplus office items listed. We am asking that we add under appointments a D for Board of Review. And number 3A can actually be removed as AMO is utilizing a current policy, so we don't need a developer's agreement or anything special there. So we can remove 3A. I'd like to add again 1D, Board of Review. Let's see. I think that we didn't have any other additions than that. So is there any problem with anybody with that agenda? Are you comfortable adding those items? If you have any issues, speak up. Okay, we'll move forward with that agenda then. Looking at that agenda, does anybody declare a conflict of interest? Okay, nobody's conflicted. We will move on to public comment. What's that?
I didn't ask if anybody was conflicted.
Oh, well, yeah, that is a difference, isn't it? There's a distinction to be made there. Okay, this is the time for public comment. I would ask that anybody who would like to speak to the board on any issue can come to the podium, say their name and address, and let the board know what's on their mind. How are you, sir?
Good.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Just quickly, the topic that I want to refer to is going to be under number 4, the planning and zoning. But the actual topic, it's, oh, by the way, Paul Gonzalez, 709 Munson Avenue. And that's with a Z, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z, to correct the minutes. The topic I want to just talk about firstly is toothpaste. Because you're holding the tube, and how much you let out is going to be up to you. Putting it out is easy. Putting it back in is difficult. Now, that analogy probably goes down to the point I want to make to you as you consider the issues with respect to the short-term rental, and that is it is easier in the future to liberalize the policy than it is to try and make it tougher. Because if you go the other way, and you attempt to make it tougher later on down the road, you're going to be stuck with the whole issue of grandpersoning any poor decision that had been previously made. So just remember, easier to liberalize in the future than it is to try and make it tougher. And then finally, I'd like to once again push for the fact that in the short-term rental, we should have at least a minimum time on short-term. Now, what is the right time? I don't know. That's for you to decide. But I would suggest that it be at least 3 days. And the reason for that is that if you have at least 3 days, you avoid the loophole of the weekend jaunts where you have the, you know, weekend situations where we have the wedding celebrations and the frat parties and all the things that we've talked about before. So, again, I... think about it, and remember, you're holding the tube. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other public comment at this time? Mark? How are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good, Pat. Thanks for asking. Mark McKellar, 2050 East River Road. I know you guys have been kicking this around and looking into it deeply on the short-term rental program, whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to tell you that I'm hoping that you're ready to take some action very soon. I had people yesterday trespassing on my property, and they were at the residence, or not even residence, but at this cabin for one day, one overnight. And I'm not even out of the winter yet. It's already started. I elected not to speak to them. I elected them to make their way out. But my point being is that I don't want to see this as being like an all or nothing where we can just say there's going to be no short-term rentals in our community, because I think that is too extreme. But I also agree with the gentleman earlier. It's that it's easier to back off, and I think we got to have a little heat into this thing, because, you know, I'm in a residential area, and my investment and my time that I'm spending there with myself and my family is constantly interrupted. Now, if you don't like it, you know, well, let me explain to you this way. How would you like it if I basically camped out on the edge of your property a day at a time and raised holy heck and then didn't care because I was gone and you have to stay because the next person's coming in and they're going to do that too? And that's been happening for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, in our home. We came to this township on purpose. We bought this property on purpose. And we didn't realize that we were going to have somebody basically put in a mini Holiday Inn right next or across the river from us. So we've been invaded. We've had our property, you know, stomped all over, our property damaged. And we've had people tell us everything under the sun about what they're going to do and why. And I just hope that you guys have an enforcement piece that you can fund it. Let us work with the local authorities to enforce it, because if you get something with some meat on the bones, I'll pick up the phone and I'll be an active participant. That doesn't mean that every time somebody shows up in a short-term rental situation, I'm going to have a problem and I'm going to have a problem with them. But I need to have something to work with. So I'm asking you to seriously consider moving forward with it, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, not going extreme, but give us something to work with here. Because, quite frankly, it's just disheartening what's happening as a private resident in a private residential area that I'm dealing with a commercial rental situation. And I've got a bad player that bought the property across from me. And that's the person that needs to be penalized, not people that are good players that are running and having no problems. So, thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we will move forward with correspondence. You'll notice in your packet, you will notice a Tart Trail newsletter, Up North Media 9th Annual Report, and a passport update. So I did just want to add a clarification on the Tart Trail. It mentions in the Tart Trail newsletter about sidewalks on US 31 North, and I'm going to have to talk with Tart because I need to get a clarification on that. Obviously, you know, we haven't been clearing sidewalks on US 31 North at this point in time. I've been seeking and working with the city commission, the Traverse City city manager, to see what's potentially possible in partnership with them, and also working with some other snow clearing companies to see what's possible, but nothing for this season. And even we wouldn't have been able to start mid-season anyway because of the snow pileup. It would have been difficult. So it's something that we're looking at, but their wording a little different. So take that little bit of grain of salt when you read that. And passport update, I just want to thank you for including that and congratulate all of the staff and officials who've been involved with that passport and bringing that to East Bay Township. So we'll move on to the consent calendar, and Ann, I'll go ahead and have you read the consent calendar, but I did want to offer two things. One, Under HC Employment Manual, that update to 6.7, I do want the board to know that I received an email this afternoon from legal counsel that they had no issues or concerns regarding 6.7, the update in that in the verbiage. And also on D, you have sheet on your desk that goes through what those surplus items are. So with that, I'll turn that over to Ann to read the consent calendar.
The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent calendar be removed from there and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses on the agenda is approved by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. This evening you have board minutes, 1-4-2018 and January 8th, 2018, regular minutes. The fourth were a special meeting minutes. And it says somewhere that we have amending the previously adopted December 11, 2017 regular meeting minutes. From the general fund, check numbers 13575 through 13644 in the amount of $53,622.58. Check numbers, from the emergency fund, sorry, check numbers 3734 through 3751 were paid in the amount of $9,793.03. The receiving fund, check numbers 2526 through 2534, paid in the amount of $16,480.96. From the escrow fund, check numbers 1527 through 1531 for the amount of $1,731.70. There were three payrolls, the first being 12/24/2017 through January 6, 2018. Check numbers 6116 through 6121 totaled $44,629.66. Payroll dated January 7, 2018 through January 20, 2018. Check numbers 6122 through 6131 totaled $35,577.84. And the payroll dated January 21st, 2018 through February 3rd, 2018. Check numbers 6132 through 6138 totaled $41,161.76. Total payroll was $121,369.26. And total amount paid was $202,997.53. And it looks like you don't have any budget adjustments and other items where resolution 2018-01 regarding the March Board of Review dates, a 2018 water and sewer rates, annual update 6.7, and surplus office items.
Thank you, Ann. And I would also note, under that employment manual on the 6.7, I did notice a typo as I was just looking at it this afternoon. You'll see it's under the recommended. It's just a simple S is added. On the third line down, under the recommended 6.7, about three-quarters of the way across, it says the immediate supervisor of township employees. It should say township employee. So the S should be out of there.
And if I could, just under the general fund, we do have a voided check. That is check number 13590, and it is due to the length of the description running on two checks for one of our vendors, and so the second check was voided. It's in your packet.
Okay, thank you. Does any member of the board wish to have anything removed from the consent calendar?
HC.
HC, the employment manual update. Okay. Does any member of the public wish to have anything removed from the consent calendar? Okay, we'll put HC at number 6. And then we will, is there a motion for the consent calendar with HC removed?
I move to adopt the consent calendar as presented with the removal of HC to number 6 on the agenda.
Okay. All right. And is there support for that? Well, but let me ask you real quick. Could we note that that's in sorry, HC. Just the note that the voided 13590.
With the noted of the voided check of 13590 in the under the general fund.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Is there support for that?
Support.
Okay, the motion's been made and supported, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Sure. Henschel?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Cortez?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay, thank you. We will move on to the first item before us, which is our appointments. See, we have a number of appointments. We have, just going over them quickly, the Northern Nexus. You have the information that was emailed to the township regarding them getting that board kind of shored up again with its appointments. The recommendation for that is to appoint Beth Friend, supervisor, as a regular member, and Tracy Bartlett, treasurer, as the alternate member. That follows the previous appointments. And then those appointments would begin on February 13th, 2008, and then terminating on 11/20 of 2020. Let's see. We also have Grand Traverse Metro. We have a recommendation for a second alternate for that. You can see I included a memo in the packet. It was also copied to the fire chief, the chair, and administration, basically going over what's in the Articles of Incorporation with the governing board regarding alternate members. And it goes over the status that Glenn and I are regular members. Brian Morrow is an alternate member, some, and down through what we've seen on other township boards. So the recommendation there is to appoint Sue Cortade as a second alternate. And then we go on to the East Bay Charter Township Planning Commission. You have received a memo that I sent to Rick Brown and Rob Tubbs, and kind of the process that we looked at and went through. And then you received my recommendation for the appointment of John Syke to the Planning Commission. And I would like to stress to the board that all of the applicants put me in the enviable position of talking with other township supervisors, and they were mentioning, you know, sometimes it's difficult to get people interested in boards, and we had quite a selection and a lot of, you know, very good candidates for that. So that was not particularly an easy choice, but in the end you have to pick one person for that. So the recommendation is for John Syke. And then we've added tonight the Board of Review. As you all know, in follow-up documentation, that this kind of evolved rather quickly. We do have a current Board of Review regular member who has to step down at this point in time. They've been a valuable member for 10 years, and we've been looking at the Board of Review this entire time and always, you know, always thinking if there is ever a vacancy, what would we shift? And at this point in time, I would like to recommend that Christopher Cox, who is actually here tonight, thank you for attending, Christopher. He is a alternate board member, and I would like to recommend having him as a regular Board of Review member and to appoint Frank Gurin as an alternate Board of Review member. So those are the items that are up for appointment. Is there comments or questions or discussion from the board on those?
Are you going to want separate motions for all?
However you want to do it. I mean, we could do it all as one, but it's kind of a long list. I did note here, I think we should probably put the appointee's name, the name of the board, whether they're regular or alternate, and if they're term dates, applicable term dates in there. So maybe it would be better to do it.
I think it's better to do it separate.
Okay. All right. Other additional comments, questions, motions, suggestions?
So I will start with the first one. I make the motion to appoint Beth Friend and Tracy Bartlett, Beth Friend being the regular attendee for the Northern Nexus, Tracy Bartlett as the alternate for a term that will start tomorrow on 2/13/18, terminating at the term ending of their terms on 11/20/2020.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there support for that motion?
Support.
Okay. Overwhelming support. We'll go with it. And you can pick one. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? By no? Okay, the motion passes. Thank you for that appointment. We'll move on to Grand Traverse Metro alternate member. Does anybody have any questions, or is there a motion regarding that?
I'll make a motion that Super K be appointed to the alternate member of the Metro Board.
Okay. Motion has been made. Is there support for that?
I support that.
Okay. Motion has been made and supported. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? By no. Motion passes. Okay. Welcome to the club over
Thank
there.
You,
we're going to move on to the East Bay Charter Township Planning Commission. Really an interesting process. It was nice having conversations with all these individuals and kind of their perspective. Mr. Gonzalez, who's in our audience, was one of the applicants, and you know, I really appreciated seeing somebody who came from the perspective of being interested in an issue to deciding that they wanted to contribute, and it was really good conversations. So is there any questions regarding that appointment or a motion?
No, I will make the motion to appoint John Syke to fill the vacancy on the Planning Commission with the term ending July 31, 2020.
Okay, is there support for that?
Support.
Okay, a motion has been made and supported. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? By no. Motion passes. We'll add on to the added agenda item of the Board of Review. Again, the recommendation is to appoint Christopher Cox as a regular member and Frank Gurin as an alternate member. And I do have those. Give me half a second here. I don't think I had those terms on that. But the terms would be effective immediately through December 31st, 2018. And we have to remind Frank and Christopher, you'll know here, you need to take that oath of office within 10 days. This
right.
one's particular. Within 10 days, you have to be sworn in, or else it'll be on our consent calendar in March, which we've done before.
I make a motion to appoint Christopher Cox as a regular Board of Review member and Frank Guerin as the alternate with the term commencing immediately with a term expiring 12/31 of 2018.
Okay, there is a motion for that. Is there support?
Support.
Everybody wanted that.
Is it like a basketball? Don't they do like a jump?
I'm too short for that.
Anyway. All right, so the motion has been made and supported. Is there further discussion? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no? Okay, motion passes. All right. Thank you, everybody, for getting those shored up. We're really very lucky and fortunate with the board members that we have. Let's see.
John, if you want to come and see me sometime the next week or so that we can get your paperwork taken care of.
Oh,
thank
John,
you.
I didn't even see you back there. How are you doing?
Thank you.
All right. Very good.
You blended in behind Rick.
I couldn't see him between the other two individuals. So thank you for coming. And if I had known you were there, I would have commented that we enjoyed talking with John as well, obviously. Okay, we'll move on to the second item before the board, which is the social host awareness. Sue, I know you've brought this to the board. Would you want to
yes.
go over that?
This organization has come to us a number of times, and it's they're looking for a resolution of support to say that as parents, as adults, we want to make sure that we give safe alternatives to our kids. They really want to target April as that month before proms and those type of things happen. So that is not something we haven't seen before. It is something that I welcome. I think any chance we can do to provide a good example, we got to take it.
Okay, so there's a proclamation in our packet. Is there a motion to support the proclamation declaring April 2018 as a social host responsibility month?
I will make that motion.
Okay, motion has been made. And is there support? Any further discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed by no? Okay, motion passes. All right, thank you very much. Everybody be careful out there. All right, we'll move on to AMO. As we mentioned, there is a removal of the payment plan for the benefit fees as Mr. Orth is utilizing an in policy in place of 2014-5, which basically spans those out over 5 years. Brian, do you want to come up and talk about number 3B, the water and sewer infrastructure?
Good evening. Brian Souza from Wade Trim. There's probably nobody more excited to be sitting here tonight and having some of this infrastructure behind him than Adam. I know it's been a long road for him, and he's really looking forward to moving on from it. So as part of his project and his development, what he was required to do was extend water and sewer from basically from Edgecombe Road along Hammond to his west property line. And then he extended water and sewer services into his property. So part of the process of what we have to do is make sure that all of the closeout documents are submitted. Anything that needed an easement, we've got an easement, and it's been recorded. A maintenance bond is in place. Drawings, paper copies, AutoCAD copies, service lead elevations, record drawings. There's a whole host of information. I'm happy to say that as of today, we have all of the required information for closeout. There is one item that we need to talk about this evening, the sewer main along Hammond Road. There's a requirement for a certain slope on a pipe. It's a state requirement set in place by the DEQ. The slopes on the pipe that was installed along Hammond are slightly flatter than what the state requires. Is it a big issue? No, not really. Especially considering this is the last piece of gravity main you will have in along Hammond Road, because as you go from the last manhole that he put in and you head west, you're going downhill as you go to the west, and then you hit Town Line Road, which is the township line, right? So anything that comes into that manhole will be pumped. It'll be done by a force main. So extending gravity sewer to the west from that manhole would not happen. Additionally, the pipe that is used is PVC, very smooth, not rough at all. So you don't see issues with a flatter slope on sewer. But the state requires a certain slope. We didn't exactly meet that. So one of the things that they request in their documents is any pipes that are flatter than what the state minimum is, that the maintenance entity, which would be the DPW in this case, submits a letter that says they're willing to take it on, and that they take on responsibility of cleaning that sewer should anything happen. Well, DPW is not going to take it on and take that responsibility when they're not the ones that were, you know, that put the pipe in. So, and I mentioned this briefly to Adam earlier today, that we may have to talk about a maintenance agreement, not a maintenance bond. I mentioned there's a bond. It's a one-year maintenance bond. In case something breaks, in case something goes haywire, we found a pipe that rusted through, it was defective, the bond would cover a replacement for that. A maintenance agreement would be something such like, you know, that the developer would pay for those lines to be cleaned as needed or every 5 years or whatever the numbers are. But the reason that the DEQ wants to see that is because the minimum slope that they require is in place because it maintains a certain velocity of water flowing in that pipe such that grit cannot settle out and the pipe won't plug over time. Okay, so as it moves slower, flatter pipe, the water's flowing at a slower speed, you have a higher potential for grit and other things to settle out and collect and accumulate in the pipe. I've seen pipes much larger than this in bigger cities that are almost completely choked off. So it's an issue. Do I really think it's going to be a problem with this pipe? I really don't think it's an issue, but it's the requirement that the state puts in place that we have to have some type of maintenance agreement somewhere if the pipe's laid at less than minimum grade. So that's kind of a long discussion to say we've got everything we need, but I recommend that we have a maintenance agreement in place with the developer just to combat against that should anything be needed. And I'm sure that's something that we could work out quickly. I don't know if Adam wants to speak to that or not, but we could work out quickly. I know he wants to move forward as quickly as possible. It's something that doesn't take, we'd probably have it done tomorrow. But
okay. Adam, do you mind stepping up? Did you have any comments on providing that maintenance agreement?
Well, my thing was, got about $250,000 wrapped up into the water and sewer lines going through there, and then, have them done improperly a little bit. It's a bit frustrating, I guess. Wasn't anything that I had to do with it. I paid everybody that was involved in the process, the Elmers and the engineering and all that stuff that goes along with it and the boring and whatnot. So, to get to the end and then find out there's a little glitch in there has been a bit frustrating for me.
So, Adam, in particular, are you willing to supply that maintenance agreement with respect to that issue?
What would be the length of that? I don't want to be married to this thing for the rest of my entire life. Is it something that's a one-year thing, a two-year thing? At what point do we, I hand over $250,000 for a dollar and,
Brian, if you want to address this.
I think a 10-year sunset on that would be fine, assuming that we don't see that there's big issues. If we go to clean it on a five-year interval every 5 years and we see that we're getting a lot of grit settling out, which, again, it's at the end of the line. We're not going to see a lot of flow through that. I would think a 10-year sunset on that would be fine.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
So who didn't do the right slope?
Yeah.
Did we hire? Was it on our portion of the line?
No. Well, okay. It's on the portion that we're going to take over.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah, it's kind of a slippery slope. What happens, the way it's installed, is there is a service lead that comes from the north side to the sewer on the south. So it goes underneath Hammond Road. In order to put that in, you install it by a method called bore and jack. So what they do is they bore and they install a steel casing, under the road. And when they install that casing, it's supposed to be put in at a proper grade and proper elevation. Because then you come through later and you slide your actual service lead through that casing. Okay, well, that's put in before you do any gravity sewer. So that was installed a little low. All right. So the contractor came and we talked about how to handle that in that situation. He was going to get us some elevations on, we went through and we laid it out and everything looked like it would work. Okay, sitting in the office with the contractor that was putting in the sewer. Two different contractors. One did the bore and jack, a different contractor put in the sewer. So everything was going to work, and then when we get to the end point and we get record drawings with elevations, I said, well, this didn't work. So my first question was, are these elevations right? Can we get those shot in and connected or at least checked? That was done. So it's really, from step one, that casing was installed too low. Now, how low are we talking? We're talking 5 inches, 6 inches. So it's not... we're not talking feet, okay. Right? Just to give you an order of magnitude.
Right.
So we're not off that much. But
so is there some, I'm just devil's advocate here, Glenn's famous words. Is there a way to go back to the contractor that put it in, had the wrong slope to begin with, and have them do the maintenance agreement?
That would be for the developer to decide.
Okay, so the developer, because Adam hired them to do the job. Okay.
I can tell you the one thing we don't want to do is, and we kind of went this direction, the fewer bore and jacks, the fewer utilities underneath that road, the better.
No, I get that. I'm just, I'm like, okay, who's ultimate? Ultimately responsible, probably Adam, because he hired them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and one of the things I required of the contract.
I'm with you, Adam. I wouldn't want to be doing this either.
One of the things that I required of the sewer contractor, I said, give me a letter on. We knew what happened. I said, but give me a letter that I can include in the contract or the closeout documents that explains how you got to this, how this happened, how it got to this point.
Brian, let's see, just for verification, you had given us a closeout checklist, so the ones that, as of a few days ago, were an issue were the one-year maintenance bond, valid for 1 year from the township acceptance of system. That's a done deal. You're good with that. We also had the water main pressure test results.
Those are done.
And then the sanitary sewer air test results. Okay, so we're good with all of that. All right. Other questions regarding this? Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah. Ian, I know it's not Adam's fault. He's just the guy that put the bill. But I'm trying, I guess what comes to mind is the other sewer line we got in East Bay that's flat that seems to be a problem.
Yeah, down by the bay.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is, when in the drawings, was there not the specification put in on each length of pipe or where it should set?
You don't give a elevation for each 20-foot section, but you give elevations within each manhole. And manholes are about 500 feet apart. Okay. So each manhole has what we call an invert, which is the inside bottom of the pipe. So it gives an elevation of start and stop.
I guess I'm just curious how it happened. I realize what happened, but with the elevations, and I guess another concern I have is I don't know how much slope you got in there, but the thing is, if that thing settles at all, is it going to be completely flat or going to the north?
Yeah, well, no, it won't. We won't. That won't happen. I mean, there's enough slope in there that that's not going to happen. Plus, with the mandrel test, one of the tests that we did, or that's required, was done quite a while after the sewer was in the typically, they'll run a mandrel test, and that's just a ram you run through the pipe to make sure it didn't get deformed in size or that there's a discontinued joint. A lot of times they'll do those right after they install them. All right, so there's no settlement has occurred. Everything's pretty straight. Well, this mandrel test was done months after the final installation. All right, and that all came back fine. I mean, you get a video of it. You can watch the mandrel go through, and it's got some slope attached with it. So if anything was going to settle, it had been before that time, before that mandrel test was done. So that's one of the saving graces of it, knowing that.
Okay, Brian, so there's a couple of things here. Number one, lateral fees that are associated with this. I'm assuming we'll be getting those costs together to establish lateral fees at a subsequent meeting.
Yep, we've got all the costs associated with the project. That's one of the items they need to submit, and then we calculate lateral fees from that once the township.
Okay, all right. The motion on the wording typically was, I mean, just motion to accept, you know, the water and sewer extension constructed by AMO Development. Is that sufficient or what motion?
I think we should, the motion should say accept the infrastructure as installed by AMO Incorporated once the maintenance agreement for cleaning the sewers has been executed.
Okay. All right, so we'll ask for a further discussion, but I just want to clarify two things that we'll be looking for. One is a motion to accept the water and sewer infrastructure as installed by AMO Development, subject to a maintenance agreement for the cleaning of the sewer.
Cleaning of the sewer.
Cleaning of the sewer, with a suggested 10-year term.
Yes.
To be reviewed in 2027 is what I have,
sure.
Is what I was thinking. So then basically you come up to 2027, the year before it's due or ending, and you say there's been no issues here, then we don't have to deal with it. But we're not saying it definitely terminates then, because if we have had issues.
If we have had issues, then it would continue.
Okay. And then the second motion would be for the check, for the approval of check 1532 that basically largely settles very close to the dollar. Hopefully we won't be jockeying any money back and forth. We've accommodated for just about every invoice and done a detailed analysis over the past 2 years on this. So we'd be looking for an approval for that check amount for 1532. Is there discussion on this, or is further discussion on this, or is there a motion?
And that check will show up on the consent calendar next month, so that will further be approved.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion to accept the water and sewer infrastructure as installed by AMO Development, subject to the maintenance agreement, with a suggested 10-year term to be reviewed in 2027?
I would make that motion.
Okay. Is there support for that motion? Okay. Motion has been made and supported. We'll do a roll call vote on that. Ann?
Bartlett?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Portaid?
Yes.
Walters?
No.
Merrill?
Yes.
Merrill. Henschel?
Yes.
And Friend?
Yes. Okay, that's step one. And then is there a motion to authorize or approve check 1532 in the amount of $14,260.82? And again, you'll notice that this is includes a letter that lost the second page here.
It's
but
on the back.
Oh, there we go. That, you know, let's Adam know as well that this is because he's using resolution 2014-5 with the DPW, and that if he were not to do that, he would need to pay the benefits in full with the Department of Public Works as they calculate them. So but I've already been in touch with John DeVozo, and we generally know that should be right about 23-4, and what we're looking at, Adam's already calculated his payments with John, so I think that we're good to go with that. But that would be, I would ask for a motion to approve that check 1532 in that amount.
1532 or 42? I'm sorry.
That's okay, 1532.
32.
32.
Sorry. I would make that motion.
Okay. Is there support for that motion? Okay. I'll support that motion. Any further discussion or questions? Okay. We'll do a roll call vote, Ann.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Portaid?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Okay. I think we're done, aren't we?
Thank you.
How about that, Adam?
Yeah, we're getting closer.
You need to go buy a lottery ticket tonight. How about that?
Yeah. Not quite that close, right?
No. Close.
Well, you could buy about 14,260 lottery tickets. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll move forward with the next agenda item. And Brian, thank you as well for that. I know you've been working at getting that wrapped up for us for this meeting. We'll move on to agenda item number 4, which is planning and zoning. Rick and Leslie are here, and they actually have 3 different agenda items: the annual report from the Planning Commission, the accessory dwelling units, and the short-term rentals. Specifically, we wanted to be able to contain kind of the conversation so it wasn't, you know, evolving and longer and looking at the length of the meeting. So it was regarding septic and holding tanks and minimum stays. So, Rick, if you want to kind of take it away from there.
Okay, why don't we tackle the annual report first. As you can see, we had a very busy year from the report. We had 173 land use permits in 2017, which is 30 more than the previous year and the most we've had since 2006. So having Leslie stand out at the corner and waving people down worked. Then we also had 56 single-family dwellings, which was considerably more than the previous year of 38 and 44 in 2015. The only thing that dropped a little bit was enforcement actions compared to the previous year, but we were busy across the board pretty much generally. We also have some exciting projects coming up this year. We've already had a couple of cases before the Planning Commission. We've had a special land use. We've had a rezoning case, actually 2 rezoning cases, one of which was recommended for denial. The other one is coming back next month for further discussion, kind of semi-related. And then we have some large developments proposed, including which will probably come to the Planning Commission in April now, just based on timing and such, for 2 large hotels on US 31, where Pebble Brook and some of those other vacant lands to the east of it are, 2 6-story hotels, one a Staybridge Suites by Marriott and the other a Staybridge Suites and the other a Residence Inn by Marriott. Don't want to cross-pollinate corporations there. So So that, and then there's also a smaller retail building that has a drive-through, and the drive-through needs a special land use. The hotels and the retail, just site plan approval. And then we have also a daycare center, or a daycare home proposed. So with those, along with the technical assistance grant we recently received from Michigan Association of Planning, which will be starting on March 1st, that technical assistance grant is for health planning in the community. We've also, just this past week, a grant application for Building Healthy Communities grant from the Health Department of Northwest Michigan, or Northwest Michigan Health Department, one of those two, for hoping to get some bicycle parking racks here at the library, at Grace McDonald Park, Arbutus 5 Park, Pine Grove Park, Killingsworth Park, Gents Park, and I'm probably forgetting one at the moment.
Seven locations.
Yeah. So, and so we hope to hear from them on that in the next few weeks. So between all of those things, and also working with the Parks and Commission on the Parks and Recreation Plan update and variances and all those fun things, we expect a busy year in 2018 as well.
Okay. Any questions regarding the annual report? Comments? Okay. You guys go. Planning is on. There you go. All right. All right, we'll move on to the next portion that is brought to us by Planning and Zoning, and that's the accessory dwelling unit.
Right. This was brought to you a couple of months ago at one of your meetings, and some keen eyes caught a couple of typos that neither staff nor the County Planning Commission nor the Township Planning Commission noticed. And there were a couple of references to areas outside the growth boundary, and that was not the intent of this. This is supposed to be only for our areas inside the growth boundary of the township. So those have been corrected, and they are now the document now reflects what the intent was of staff and the Planning Commission. And you know, our goal here is to try to provide yet another affordable housing option for residents and their families here in East Bay Township. If you recall, about a year ago, we adopted the Pocket Neighborhood Residential District, which allows for smaller size housing units in a cottage cluster and or bungalow court type design. We had a developer in today that we spoke to a little bit about that option. And then this is the second step, is to provide the ability for people to do accessory dwelling units, for whether it be for a young adult who just recently graduated from college or high school and needs a place to stay, or a mother-in-law, or a retiree or senior or something like that. So if you have any questions, I'll be glad to try and answer them.
Any questions for Rick on the accessory dwelling units? I just have one quick question. On the REUs, that would be an additional REU per accessory dwelling unit.
Yeah, but so they're only allowed one accessory dwelling unit, so it's not like you're going to have four or five.
Okay. Right. All right. But it is one sewer and one water benefit.
That's correct.
Per each accessory dwelling, or per dwelling unit.
Or for the accessory dwelling unit, in addition to what's required for the primary dwelling.
Okay. So that's metered then separate as well?
I think it'd have to be, yes.
Okay. Do all municipalities handle it that way, or do some? Do you think basically tied in with the primary residence?
I'm not aware. I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry.
Okay, Glenn, had you looked into that before? Do you know?
Well, the city's the only one that really has ever done it. They don't sell benefits.
Okay. All righty. I'm not opining on whether it's appropriate or not. I was just curious.
Well, I mean, you know, if we see that nothing's happening in that vein down the road, maybe that's something to look at, you know.
Yeah.
But given the number of inquiries we have on the topic, it's, aside from short-term rentals, this is probably the second most routinely asked question.
Okay.
I have a feeling that there will be a need for it.
Okay. All right. Discussion, motions, what is the board's pleasure?
I would make a motion to approve the zoning amendment 1-17 accessory dwelling.
Second.
Okay, and that's the motion that you need, correct? Then that contains everything. All right.
Sorry, I was keeping it short and simple.
That's absolutely fine.
Because they didn't
sure
have a suggested.
I just wanted to make sure we had the...
Yep.
We could go through the, you know...
Nope.
The elongated version, if you prefer.
Nope, that's just fine.
No.
That's just fine. Is there... Okay, there's been a motion and support made to approve the zoning amendment 1-17. Any further discussion? Okay, Anne, we'll do a roll call vote.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Forte?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Brett?
Yes. Okay, thank you for your work on that. Appreciate the work
thank
of
you.
The Planning Commission, Mindy, on that. And we will move to the short-term rentals, specifically the septic and holding tank and a minimum stay information.
Yes. We had a very productive meeting back in early January on short-term rentals with the board, going through each and every subsection. And there were a couple of areas where we kind of asked for more, or the board asked for more information. And Brian Graham, who was working on this, was kind enough to do some research on that. In particular, the holding tanks as septic tanks. He provided some draft language for you here. He spoke with the health department and got some guidance from them. And has provided some language here on the page where I have some comparisons. He also, just as an aside, provided some language about complete applications because that was another question that you had asked about at that meeting. And there's some slight differences in the language there on the top of the page, but primarily on the bottom of the page in Section 6 where it talks about wells, septic, and holding tanks. He's pretty much removed references to wells based on their input and then provided language on the septic tanks and the holding tanks that the health department is more comfortable with and feels it would be useful in terms of the township. Since there was a concern, just as a reminder to everyone here, some of the board members of requiring that they septic tanks be inspected or up-to-date inspections every 3 years. And then there were some other requirements related to holding tanks. I will note that just this evening we received some communication from the Watershed Center. Each of you has a copy of that on your desk. Well, that arrived around 5:30 this evening, so I didn't really have a chance to get it to you earlier. But basically expressing some of their thoughts on review of this subject. In conversations I've had with them on the phone, they were pleased to know that we were pursuing inspections of septic and holding tanks, but obviously that's not necessarily the case now, at least in the format that was proposed originally. So they were just expressing some thoughts on that. So the language is here for you to look at in terms of what the township attorney proposed for well, septic, and holding tanks. I can read it out loud for the audience just so they hear it. Basically, for those short-term rentals not connected to a public sewer system, the septic system shall be properly functioning. For purposes of this subsection, properly functioning shall mean that the well and septic systems comply with all applicable regulations of the Grand Traverse County Health Department's environmental health regulations as determined by an individual certified by the National Sanitation Foundation or the National Association of Wastewater Technicians. In no case shall holding tanks be used as the sole component of a septic tank system for a short-term rental unless such holding tank is permitted by Grand Traverse County Health Department for the short-term rental use and the maintenance of that holding tank complies with all requirements of Grand Traverse County Health Department. So that's the language he's proposing based on his conversation. I've included a summary of his conversation in an email that he provided to us if you need to see more details on whom he spoke with and things like that. That's one of the two topics. The other one is the minimum stay issue. Mr. Gonzalez reminded us of that a little while ago. When it went through the Planning Commission, the draft that was provided did not necessarily include a minimum stay. It had a typically, obviously, a maximum is 30 days, because anything over 30 days is considered a long-term rental then. But there are some rationale for considering a minimum stay. For one, turnover, as some folks just mentioned earlier this evening. If you have a nightly turnover, that's more traffic, that's more people, that's more noise, what have you. It also is more like what I would consider, or staff would consider, a hotel or a bed and breakfast or a similar establishment if you're having nightly turnover, a transient type business like that. Providing a specific period, a minimum period of time, also provides some reassurance to neighbors that there's not going to be a constant changeover occurring, I mean, of guests every single night. There will be some gaps in that. Also, in thinking about the minimum stay, there was the issue raised on the part of the folks that have short-term rentals that if we set it at a bar like 7 days, then that's going to be hard for them during the off-season. If people are coming up for fall colors, or if people are coming up to ski, or if they're on a school long weekend for schools and things like that, 7 days works fine during the primary vacation season of June through Labor Day, but after Labor Day, there's a lot of shorter visits of 3 and 4 day ranges versus 7 day ranges.
Rick, so, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
We're not implying that they need to rent. If it's a 7 day, they have to rent it all 7 days. What we're saying is they cannot rent to a new visitor until after that 7 days.
Correct. They can be allowed rental per week, basically. Right.
So I guess I'm not understanding.
They want more turnover.
On the off-season.
Yeah.
Are they really going to be renting it out for 2 nights at a time in an off-season, or 3 nights?
3 or 4 is what I've heard a lot during the conversations, both in person on the phone and at these meetings. And that's, when I went back and looked at comparisons to other communities, I basically looked at other townships and or resort communities in the state, and I was rather surprised that only 2 other communities in the state have a minimum on the front end. The city of South Haven is a minimum of 2-night stay, and Milton Township, which is just to the north of us here, has a minimum of 7 days. Casco Township has no minimum, but does require the applicant to indicate the expected minimum duration of each intended stay. So I'm not quite sure how that township keeps track of that, unless they get a nightly business report or something like that from them. But all the other ones listed have no specific minimum called out. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mindy had a question there. I wanted to make sure.
It was totally the same as Sue. It was just mine was from Brian, who said the same thing.
Clarification.
So, yeah.
It's not the number. It's
the date, maximum. And it's the start of the stay. So if they start on Friday and it's a 7-day stay, they can't rent again to the following Friday. So Friday to, they could do it Friday to Friday and then flip it to Friday again, but they could also do Friday night only, and then just not rent it again till the next Friday.
It's not telling them that they have to rent it the 7 days.
Correct. Exactly. So it's just saying that there's got to be
charge for the 7 days.
Exactly. So basically, it may impact if they're going to have a nightly rate and want to have it rented the 7 days. It may affect what they are charging because of that, or they can just keep it at the 3 or 4 days or whatever.
She's getting a copy. I remember that in one of the earlier versions. I don't necessarily recall that being the case in the last version. But
it was a comment that Brian made.
Yes, it was a comment.
Brian, the attorney.
Brian Graham.
So, I'm sorry, I didn't want to get too sidetracked, but I appreciate the clarification. If you want to go ahead and continue, go.
Well, no, that's all I was going to cover. She's going to get a copy of the most recent one so we can look at the language. But as I noted, the past and unenforceable practice of the township that we've now found is that it was a minimum 7-night stay, and that was sort of so people could have the up north experience. Now, you know, we have heard a number of people express concerns that, you know, requiring a minimum 7 nights is difficult or would be more difficult. But I guess it's up to the board whether or not it feels there needs to be a specific minimum allowed or prescribed in the ordinance, or whether it should be one rental per week, or however you choose the best language to be. I'm going to look and see what we have right here. Sorry.
Okay, so if I can review real very, very briefly, that basically we're looking at some consensus tonight on the terminology provided for the complete application, the well, septic, and holding tanks, and then the minimum stay. Tracy, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just I appreciate the information from the other townships, but are there others in Grand Traverse County? I know you have Acme listed and Sutton's Bay, which isn't Grand Traverse, but I don't know what Peninsula's is.
They don't.
Garfield doesn't.
I don't think they have.
Garfield doesn't have any.
No. Garfield prohibits.
Huh? I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And I thought they. Okay.
Garfield,
so there is Garfield. No one else.
Yeah, they. I'm not surprised, but I say that only because they made a distinction, and I was wondering if they were allowed to make that distinction, which is why I say that.
No.
But Peninsula, you're right, doesn't allow the short-term rentals. Garfield Township doesn't allow them. My understanding is unless that they can show a proven track record of not having the PRE and that they can show that they had been renting. I might not have that quite accurate.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Looking at the draft ordinance, basically it says this ordinance applies to a residential dwelling units located in East Bay Charter Township, and to all persons owning exercising control over such buildings or premises, which in total or part are rented for less than 30 days at a time. It does not talk about minimum 7 days or 1 7-day period of time. That was an earlier discussion, but the one that's under consideration right now does not have that.
Does not have a minimum stay. Okay.
Well, it doesn't have a minimum, and it doesn't have the 7-day rule that we used to use.
All right. What were you guys looking for?
The letter from the attorney. I can't pull it up on this. I thought it was 3 days.
I was trying to find it. The space in the wrong direction.
We took that out about 3 drafts ago.
I might hear some.
Okay. Glenn, were you looking for the letter regarding from January 8th regarding the septic systems from the attorney? Okay.
Well, that's just the length of time.
All right. So I think
where some of the confusion might be for the license, there's a reference that it has to be approved within 7 days. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the length of time. I think maybe if somebody saw that 7 business days in there, they might have misunderstood what
that. All right. Did you get the letter?
No,
the
go copy? Ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess we'll kind of take this in pieces with respect to the completed application terminology. Do any board members have any discussion or commentary concerns on the proposed revised language from council on D, complete application? So it's basically saying if not all of the information is supplied or if the fee's not paid, then the township would send written notification on the deficiencies.
Right.
And then after a reasonable time, I would assume that's stated in the letter, then the application is deemed incomplete and denied. Okay.
So it doesn't babysit, but it gives some guidance for what they're missing.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Kind of consensus that seems fine.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a cutoff. Like they turn in partial application. Leslie sends them a letter after, 2 weeks or?
Immediately
of what they're missing. And then after 30 days, they have to start all over?
When does it expire?
Yeah.
And that would be something that, you know, this gives a general breakdown, but we could put that into the application. That way,
You could get some stacks going.
Yeah, I mean,
well, yeah, and I don't,
just having it codified,
I mean,
it'd probably be easier.
You know, you could put a tickler system together, but you don't, I mean, we don't need to sit there with all these partials and.
Well, in regular applications, like for utilities or land use permits, I generally go through it when they're there and say, hey, I need this, 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 and this. And a lot of times I'll give it back to them and say, bring it back with everything else. Mm-hmm. And I can still do that, which would probably be an easier process.
Right. But I think giving them, I like the idea of sending them a letter or giving them a checklist when either you're going over it with them when they're in-house or, you know, send it to them. That way you have something in writing.
Okay.
And I think that's an easy, you know, thing to do on the building software.
And I do think that this is specific enough, but mm-hmm. leaves some room to allow us with the application.
Mm-hmm. Discretion.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
I can see it being a checklist that when one comes in, you grab it, and you're looking at it, you're checking it off, and you're handing it to them, and you're keeping it a copy.
Yeah.
You know, if it's there are too many things not there, you may just say, here, take it all back.
Here's
this
a checklist.
This is what we need. There's a checklist. When you get it all back together, bring it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
So it sounds like we pretty much have a kind of consensus on that portion of it. The well, septic, and holding tanks. Okay, so for that portion, we do... Oh, same page. we do have proposed revised language from the township attorney on that, and we do also have the January 8th email from him to Rick that talks about his discussion with Grand Traverse County Health Department. Basically, the revised language... Rick, it doesn't... So in the initial one... It basically said, if the system shall be properly functioning, and then inspections every 3 years. The new language says, the system shall be properly functioning, and here's what a properly functioning system is defined as, basically. Okay, so there still is a requirement in the new K, the revised K, that when they pull a permit for this, they have to provide documentation from somebody certified as NSF or NAWT that it's a properly functioning system, correct? Okay. And then, all right, I guess I'm going to stop there. Any questions, discussion from the board?
I talked to Butch Strait about this on Saturday, and he said, well, what do you think about my comments? I said, you gave us problems, you didn't give us solutions. I said, do you think that the septic tanks, you know, we have systems out there that need, you know, when they're going from, you know, the couple using it once, twice a year and once on for a ski weekend to, you know, much more use. He said, there's all kinds of drums out there that totally needs to be, I'm paraphrasing and not using his words, but they definitely need to be inspected the first time. After that, if they've been inspected, you're going to know it when it fails. You know, the system fails, it's going to be like any others. But it's the systems out there that may have a catastrophic failure because they were totally not designed for the purpose that people are using it, that this makes sense. He said, after that, it's just like everybody else's, but it's just that initial application that we want to make sure that we've got a system that's not going to have a catastrophic failure. And I'm using catastrophic. He didn't say catastrophic failure.
Okay.
I did ask him for language, and he said he would provide it. So between now and then, we might have Butch's language.
And as we can always refine it as well with as we get further information. But if we have a general direction on kind of what we're seeking for our planning and zoning and Brian to put into this, other comments or questions regarding this?
Essentially, does it say it has to work as when it was put in? Is that essentially what this says?
It says that for those rentals not connected to a public system, so anything with a septic or a holding tank.
I can read it.
Yep. But it'll be properly functioning as defined by those terms. So they would have to have it certified by somebody with those designations. Is that what you were asking?
Somewhat.
Okay. Is there another part that maybe Rick can answer
think,
for you?
You know, I think it's good practice to
if somebody's going to convert a place that, like Mindy mentioned, that is visited several times a year to something that's visited all the time, that you have some type of certification from one of these people that it's a properly functioning system. That, you know, one time at least that you have that. And then it fails, then you know, people are going to know it failed, and the owners are going to get it fixed if they want to keep renting.
Rick, now, if they were to sell the home and a different buyer, and someone else obviously owns it different, they have to get a new permit anyway. So.
They have to get a new permit. We wouldn't necessarily require them to have a new inspection if it's been just 6 months or something like that.
They would need a new short-term rental
They would need a permit. New short-term rental permit, but we wouldn't necessarily.
But currently, East Bay does not require at the sale of a property that there's an inspection of their well.
Right.
But if they're applying for a short-term rental license, that is a requirement of the application at this time. So we probably have them do it again.
Yeah. I don't think you want to start making judgments as to whether 6 months or a year, was it a year and a half, you know. One of the things that, I mean, I do think that however we have the language, it is important to make sure that the wastewater disposal system is properly functioning in these rentals. So if that is a designation as properly functioning according to their the Grand Traverse County terminology defined by someone certified by that, then I think that makes a lot of sense. I was looking, found some info from MSU that did some research on septic systems statewide, and they basically came up with a ratio that the data represents about 1 in 10 or more of every septic system is failing. So that's kind of a one. I mean, that's 10%. So, you know, if we have any here that are determined by this process, I think that would be important, considering a lot of these are near our lake systems. So I would note, too, we talk about how if it is failing, that you kind of notice it. I've read several different places where it talks about you may not notice it right off the bat. I mean, you just might not, and especially if someone is more transient, I would think that would actually kind of exasperate that issue because they're not around to see it. Do you know what I mean? As like a homeowner who's there for a length period of time would be. So I think that what's in the revised K is fine. As always, I think that we should be looking at not only in the future, not only short-term rentals, but septic systems in ensuring the health of the water system in the township. Mm-hmm. Any other comments on K? Is everyone comfortable with proceeding with that proposed language from the township attorney?
Can I just ask a question? If they have it inspected, does that inspection report or certificate, whatever they get, does that stay on file with the county health department? I mean, I know we'll have a copy, but if someone else goes to purchase it, is there a copy of that?
We can certainly try to work something out with the health department to provide them copies. They're in a bit of a transition themselves to some degree because they're going to be taking over soil erosion.
I would think it would make sense that they would want to.
It would make sense. I agree. So we will make an effort to.
You can ask them, Tracy.
Yeah. Have the flow of information go between both ways.
The email from January 8th from Brian when he talked with Grand Traverse County, it says right in there that they indicated that the health department does not conduct inspections on existing septic systems. So if they don't conduct them, in all likelihood,
they really
don't track them.
Care if it's working or not.
I think that They do, but I don't know that they have the mechanisms in place to do anything about it right now. And it, that's mm-hmm. one thing that came up when I was looking at some of this research is basically on a state level, to be honest, Michigan has, I realize that this, you know, maybe as in terms of the people who authored these documents, but in some of his research, Michigan, by comparison to other states, has a more lax requirement on their septic systems.
But at the very least, it would be included in our attachments, like in assessing or something like that.
Right, and I realize the health department does not do inspections, but we have a good working relationship with them, and I think they would welcome us to get forward those to them to put in their files. I think I could talk to them about that.
I know they give the pink forms to you to put into files.
And usually they send people to us for them.
Right.
They can't find
it. That's true, because they don't know where to find it. They
now,
bring
see, I've had really good luck with them on researching property, and they always have what I need.
Good. Does anybody have further suggestions for Kay, or we will let Brian know? Go ahead, Mindy.
I should have done this, and I'm sorry I did not, but in the area, how many of these inspectors exist?
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Because
and the second question is about how much does an inspection cost?
And what are they expecting? Is there a set chart that gives them direction? And those are my three questions
there
that
I
had.
I believe that the last question that you just asked there is, because they have to be certified, so they're looking for specific things and guidance and everything. But I don't know how many inspectors or how much it costs. I think I know how much, but I have no idea how many. It's about between 200 and 300.
I've read 250 to 350.
Brian's giggling over there.
So all those professional opinions are shaking their head at about the same amount.
So do you have an idea of how many are in the area?
Since you're here.
Yeah, I guess I could.
See what happens when you stay, Brian.
I can't give you a number off the top of my head, but I know we have people in our office that are certified to do that.
More than one.
I'm sure we're not the only engineering company that has those people, so more than one, sure. Yeah, Butch, obviously, and there's probably five I can name off the top of my head.
Okay.
Good.
So there's more.
And I wouldn't get them all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Well, I feel better with these the NSF and the NAWT being listed. I think that is a better, improved upon document with those changes. I think before it was just, hey, you got to do this, but we didn't give them any way to manageably do this. This lays down a better foundation. I'm still kind of, I'd like to have those numbers. I'd like to have those costs. I'd like to have that part, I mean, just so that we know what burden, if they want to jump through those hoops to get the license, what they have to expect.
You know, I've seen some of the lists that some places have on, like, what exactly specifically they want looked at. But what I like about leaving it at this point is that as requirements of the NSF or NAW certification, as they change any of those requirements, that changes, and we're not tied to something that's
sure.
older. So we're by nature of saying that we're referencing it
and leaving it to their professional opinion based on the environment where they're at
mm-hmm.
versus water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds like you have some consensus moving forward on that. To minimum stay, let's talk about that as a board. We've kind of opened it up already for some background on it. Does the board have any discussion as far as minimum stay?
I've stayed in about 6 different HomeAway, Airbnb associated with different things that I do. I've never stayed somewhere where there wasn't a minimum stay. We went to Orlando, we stayed in a house, the minimum stay there was 5 days in Kissimmee. Raleigh was 4 days, Chicago was 4 days where we stayed, depending. These were driven by communities and their own homeowners associations that were allowing these to come in. So I don't know. I mean, 3 days seems fast to me. I mean, they're going to flip 10 tenants at their house in a month. But
it was my initial thought when taking a look at this that we, reading kind of the pros and cons of minimum stays and what other places have done, that to me, I kind of thought minimum stay sounds like a good thing to do. As far as reasons behind it, not as many turned over. Again, you don't get to a daily night thing. That doesn't mean that you have to, you know, if you have a minimum stay, and I'm not saying it should be 7 days, but I would say at a minimum 3 to 7 days is what makes the most sense, I think. But that doesn't mean they have to rent it for those 7 days. They can rent it for a 3 or 4 day weekend, but they just can't rent it for the other days of the rest of that week. So
they can reside there themselves, exactly. But they can't rent it out.
And I just think that's an important clarification when, you know, you do hear people who own short-term rentals saying that that limits them. It's a tool that we can use in this mechanism to limit kind of the revolving door, or at least minimize that impact.
So, again, this would probably be something like what Brian indicated last time we discussed this, is we're putting it in there so that there, if we find that someone is abusing that or not adhering to that, then we have a mechanism to be able to hold them accountable to it. Not saying that Leslie has to go out and check that everybody only stays 7 days. I mean, that's...
It's for the bad apples.
Right. No, I get it. I just want to make sure that we understand. Leslie is not going to say, you know, okay, I checked and... No, you had two different groups come in within 7 days.
But you're right. It's for those. So, for example, we take every person's input comment into consideration here, and we even consider the viewpoints of people who don't come and make public mm-hmm. comment. But for sake of discussion, since Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. McKellar are here, mm-hmm. in this example, if they had a resident or a parcel next to them where they had someone coming in a different group every day, every 2 days, they know that that's not
right.
The intent of this ordinance. And so they can let us know, hey, listen, we've had, you know, the minivan circle 2 days, and then another group's here and another group's here. So we can fall back on that.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not going to get rid of the problem that he had this weekend where the group was there one night.
No.
Because...
Nope.
But I think it would help it so that it's not every night in a row. Mm-hmm.
Right. If there's a minimum, they may have only want to rent it one night. But then if it's a three-night minimum, if they're adhering to that, then there's two nights where that isn't happening. Or six nights if it's a seven-day.
Well, and plus, we've already put things in place. They have to have somebody that's available for phone calls, so when the CPOs are called, they're calling, you know, they're getting a hold of that person who's in charge of correcting all those problems. So, I mean, that should help as well with, you know, some of those problems.
I think any one tool that we have mm-hmm. in this ordinance isn't going to address every problem.
No.
It's
an accumulation.
All of them working together, absolutely. Okay, so do you think that we have... is there a general consensus from others or on the minimum stay? I'm kind of hearing that we're generally acceptable to a minimum stay, but what does that look like?
We've been debating this for months, and I feel, though some of you aren't talking, that it's somewhere between 3 and 7, and so I say cut the difference and make it 5.
Or 4.
That's an option. The other thing, and yeah. I listened to what past practice has been, and it has
7.
Worked in not, you know, a really articulate manner necessarily, because we were doing, but 7 excuse me, 7 days has worked historically. And have you had much issue in establishing that in the past? I mean,
well, we technically didn't have any laws we could hold people to.
Right.
We would kindly request, and some would agree, and others wouldn't. I think you're going to have some pushback from those that during off-season times. I think we're going to have more problems then. It might not be a problem during, you know, the summer months, but I think we'll maybe have more issues in the off-season in terms of people rotating over more often, even though it's supposed to be a minimum 7 days.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
So, Rick, correct me if I'm not hearing correctly. On the off-season, the owners of the short-term rentals are looking for more turnover? That's why they want...
No, I think they're looking not necessarily for more turnover. They're looking for the where they wouldn't have to necessarily charge somebody. If you have a minimum seven-night rental, I don't know if... And I would have to look at the specific rental agreements, mm-hmm. whether people have to pay for 7 nights or whether they pay
no,
for
No, they still
six.
Pay by the night. Okay. Anything I have researched on, okay. You still pay by the night. It's just not available for specific dates. They're blocked out
right.
because you've got someone that's coming in for two. The other dates are blacked out until the next 7 day period comes
so
to be.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not technically a minimum 7 night stay. I mean, it's a minimum
seven night rental
to not more than one party.
Right.
And it's up to them how much they charge.
Exactly.
It's up to them how much they charge.
That's true, but you know, just bear in mind, even if you have a minimum seven-night rental, there's people technically could stay just one night.
Right. Yeah. And then the other six nights, it's vacant. Or it's
or it should be.
By the property
or by
owner.
The owner.
And I've heard one person mention, well, with a seven-night minimum, that doesn't give us the turnaround time, that someone could stay there 7 days and we don't have the turnaround time. And I'm thinking to my thought was is you can rent it the 3 days or the 5 days, give yourself those 2 days. It doesn't mean you have to rent it, as we're saying.
I don't think people are hearing that.
Okay.
I think that we've had a lot of people here that have something set in their mind, and they're not listening to the conversations.
It's a misunderstanding. Okay. All right.
So, Leslie, I'm going to put you on the spot if I can please have the floor.
Sure.
If this was a perfect world, as a zoning administrator, what is the time frame your hearing is acceptable? Because when we said 3 days, you went no.
Well, what I was foreseeing in my mind, and I'm going to refer to the other entity I work at, who has had short-term rentals for 10 years in a 700-resident community, and they have approximately... probably 35 short-term rentals in that small community, and they do not have a minimum stay listed at all. And I've been there over a year, and we have not had one problem. So I'm just saying that it tends to govern itself, and a lot of people, especially in the Lakes area, like the three-day minimum, so they could have somebody come for Friday and Saturday and go home Sunday, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. I was envisioning a three-day minimum. Or no minimum.
But what I'm not getting is they can still have the 3 day. So if we say you can't, you have a 7 day, basically, how do you want to phrase that? What's that?
A rental cycle.
Right, a 7 day rental cycle. It's up to them how they list that property for rent. They can still rent it just Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
And then someone wants to come in Sunday and rent it for a week. Then what do?
No, because it's not the rental cycle. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. As a part of that tool, we're trying to limit the
turnover.
Yeah, thank you.
I understand that, but how are we going to track that?
We don't need to necessarily track it. We need to have tools in the ordinance in case there's a problem. And if there is a problem, then we have the tools in the ordinance to say, okay, you know, your neighbors are reporting that there's a turnover every 4 days. You know, that's against our ordinance where we say you can have one rental every 7 days.
I mean, how are we going to track any part of it? We talked about last time with Brian. Well, we can always, as somebody mentioned, relax the standard if we find it is too difficult.
It wouldn't be grandfathered in if we didn't.
Right, because it's a...
Right.
There's no grandfathering of a police power ordinance.
Right. What were you... I'm sorry, were you... Okay. Okay. So
one way we can see that, if we hear anything, we can go out on VRBO or Airbnb and see how they're advertising too. Because you can see...
Before, if we see that overnight stays
right.
or something like that, we'll say, no, you can't do that.
Right.
I guess what I would say, like, to brought back to the board then is, you know, if it's agreeable to the rest of the board members, is terminology that limits that turnover onto a seven-night cycle. I mean, that's what we've kind of quasi-done historically, and it has worked. And we're talking about the positive tool that gives us. So I think I'd like to start there.
It is something certainly that is familiar to people, whether it's codified or not. So it's not like it's going to be out of the box new or something like that.
I think she keeps him in line. Thoughts on that from the rest of the board?
I would say I'm fine with a 7-day. I might prefer a 3, just for a 3-day weekend type situation. Is it going to make or break it for me?
Right, but someone could still do a 3-day weekend.
But it just
doesn't allow it to be rented.
The same scenario that Leslie just had. I mean, I get it because that's probably, you know, I'd come in on a Sunday and, you know, stay the 7 days and leave on Sunday. So, but I mean, it's probably not going to make or break it for me.
On the 7-day, how does that work with the sex offender thing, Mindy? I know you had mentioned that before.
Well, it's not going to matter because if you know, you could still rent it for one night. And I can't remember exactly, but I thought the sex offender registration was 7 days away. So the 7 days is not going to matter either way, unless they're gone for. You know, 7 days.
Right.
More.
Unless they rented it the entire 7 days.
Right.
Within a certain proximity to a school or daycare center.
Yeah. Okay, other comments or questions from?
I prefer the, just going to say some 4 days. Because I feel contrary. just because it pushes past that. But I personally have not stayed in one that has had a full week just because of the shorter, we have a lot of, you know, Iceman as a weekend, different
Vassal.
Things like that. And we have piggyback events that happen where that would maybe put them out of the loop of renting their place for that event through the off season. So if it was 4 days, they could still get people in before that next weekend event. But it's not completely horribly short either. So split the difference. 5 is not right down the middle, but neither is 4.
I guess my first question is, what are you trying to accomplish by setting a number of days? I guess that's the first question, because the way I'm looking at it, you say you can't rent it more than a, you got to have a 7-day period. So if somebody rents it for 1 day, it's going to stand empty for 6 days. My thought behind the whole thing was, it was brought up, they got people going there for a night and having one heck of a party, bothering the neighbors, doing all that. You still got that. They just won't rent it for another 6 days.
But you won't have six people renting it doing that 6 nights.
So you're just, you have... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
My thought is 3 days. You got a 3-day weekend is what it should be. During the summertime, and I'm going to talk the lakes area because that's where most of this goes on, people are going to go up there for a week. When they go to the lakes area in the summertime, they're going for a week. In the fall, when you got the colors, they're going to come up for the weekend. Same way with skiing. They're going to come up to go skiing, snowmobiling. It's going to be on the weekend. So that's your 3 days. I just think it should be 3 days, and I think it's going to take care of itself because, like I said, during the summertime, people are going to rent it for the week, maybe 2 weeks. During the off-season, it's going to be a weekend.
So, my thoughts, the only reason to put in a time frame is to support accountability from the owners and deterrence for those people that are just blasting through looking to see what can rent for one night so they can come in and have their lewd parties and leave.
But they're going to do
it. It's still going to happen anyway, but at the same time, at least there's, you know, we have responsibility.
You're limiting, it's the door that's at the department store where you just walk around and around and around and you're filtering through it. It limits it for the residents who are living near that property. It limits the continual rotation of people. It minimizes it. They're still going to have a rotation of people, but it's going to be on a weekly or a long weekend cycle type thing.
Well, and I think it tells the people who are doing the short-term rentals, this is not the type of, the owners of the short-term rentals, this is not the type of activity we want, and sends them a message that, you know, we're wanting you to be more neighborhood-friendly, neighbor-friendly. And so I think, again, like it's been said, it'll kind of correct itself if we, you know, I think this whole ordinance is going to help fix that as a whole. But
so could I offer a suggestion at this point in time? It seems like most of us are comfortable with a minimum rental. It just becomes the number of days, whether it's 3, 4, or 7. Let's have Rick work on that terminology with Brian. The number in that day can always be altered. As we go through, if you come back when we bring this up, say next month, you say, you know, I was thinking about that, and, you know, 3 or 4 is just not long enough, 7 is it, or you say, you know, 7 is way too long, I've been thinking 3 and 4 is really what makes a lot of sense, but at least we'll have that terminology in place. So, Andrea?
If we're going to do that, can we maybe call a vacation rental home area and find out what they're actually averaging in the down season for their rentals? Are they doing one night blasts on average? Just because they're going to have some sort of benchmark on what they can expect from season to season so they can do their projections from each year.
Mm-hmm.
You want
to know what the average number of nights off season is?
Yeah, so we can, just to be fair to them, if we set 7 and they've been consistently having 3 or 4 rentals and that's their expected turnover, that is going to impact their budget and their things and their expectation, the business that they bring in. So, you know, if we really want to be considerate of how that's been flowing with consistency, we need to ask them, what are your projections? What have they been? What's your standard performance in those areas? I think that that's fair to ask them.
Is the board fine with that? That we'll work with the terminology and we'll do some further information seeking on that, and then we'll bring that back. Does that work for everybody? Okay. All right. I do believe, unless I'm wrong, Rick, that we are through short-term rentals and item C. Correct?
Correct. Although I think we're going to wait. See if there's any comments from the public when we get the public comment on short-term rentals.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine. And we'll just, you know, we'll leave that for the second public comment because we're just about there anyway. Mm-hmm. So I was going to suggest we take a 5-minute break at 8:30, but I think we can just keep on moving here and go on to agenda item number 5. So you'll see agenda item number 5 is an update on the 2 special assessment districts. Okay, you'll recall that last year we worked on 2017-7, which is Canterbury Woods, and 2017-8, the English Woods Special Assessment District. happy to have Mark McKellar here, and we'll have him come up and comment on this in a second. But kind of just a recap is we went out to bid for that in August 20 of 17, and you'll recall that the bids were quite high. Mm-hmm. So a recommendation from the County Road Commission staff was that we rebid it. They've had a good results with rebidding it, that oftentimes it comes down to the bid price or even saving some over that. So I'm happy to tell you that rebidding it from in January of 2018, from August of 2017, over both those projects saved about $140,000. Unfortunately, we still are above those original estimates. So the Road Commission, the Township, we've worked, as it mentions here, hard to minimize the impact on the residents. So we basically take those increased expenses and cost-shared them amongst the Road Commission, the Township, and the residents. So you'll see you have a sheet right behind your cover sheet that shows the January 2018 bid. So the original estimate for the Special Assessment District was $4,143.43 for Canterbury Woods, $5,986.34 for English Woods. So a couple things. The Road Commission's percentage and participation was 25%. So by nature of it being a percentage with a higher construction cost, their contribution went up. Okay. So just by nature of, again, it being 25%. So they're spending more money on that project. The same is held true with ours, because we're at 10% based on, I included the minutes that showed exactly what was passed, and I applied it just as was based in that motion. So by nature, our contribution has gone up. You can see that total difference in contribution from the original proposal on the right side, both for the Road Commission and for the Township. You'll also notice what you don't see in there but is in there. The County Road Commission and English Woods examined their policy with respect to English Woods, because there's some significant ditching, shoulder work, and drainage that needs to be done there. And they felt that they could soundly recommend that it fell under a policy, which is a 30% match. So they've gone from a 25% to a 30% on that. So that really helped with those residents, because they obviously have they're using the policy as it's intended. Plus, it is a very high SAD too, so that has helped the residents as well. But that wasn't the basis for it. The basis was the actual work that was being done. So, as the total cost increase looks, we're about 17% increase overall. As you can see, that percentage change on the bottom, we're just under 4%. Of an increase for Canterbury Woods, and just under 7% for English Woods, and the amount assessed to the parcel owner. We do have to go out for another public hearing and notify the residents, because there's that 10% threshold in the statute, and that 10% is not related to the assessment charged to the parcel owner. It's actually to the total cost of it. So let's just in theory say that the cost went up 10%, but the Road Commission and the Township, you know, covered every cent that was over it, we would still have to go out for that public hearing, even if the assessment were exactly the same. So that is where we're at with this project. The Road Commission did, and I think I included that, here it is in the cover sheet. The Road Commission looked at this project on January 25th, and I'm happy to tell you that as far as I could tell, every road commissioner there was extremely supportive of this partnership project, and so much so that they voted to proceed with the Canterbury Woods SAD project, increasing that contribution, and then as well proceeding with the English Woods, increasing that contribution. And essentially everything rolls from that motion with the Road Commission, acceptance of bids and all of those things. Now, one of the things we are working on, and we'll bring back to you in March, we'll have that public hearing in March. We didn't try to push it and rush it and get it on tonight's schedule. We would have been really tight and lucky to do that. And we thought better to give ourselves some breathing room. It wasn't going to change the construction schedule or anything. They are looking at having this completed by July 1st, I believe, is the date that it would be completed by. The contractor can pick what time they do that, but once they start, they have so many days to complete the project, and it must be done by July 1st. So this would be done pretty quickly, and the residents would have the entire season to obviously enjoy that before they get into another winter season. Mark, I want to first of all bring you up here, and I want to thank your board for their support and see if you have any comments on the projects.
Well, I just want to thank the board for sticking to this for your residents. It's been a longer process than normal, only from the fact that the values that we received on the previous bids were astronomical, frankly. They were. And Beth coming to the board and meeting with us and going through it in detail and meeting with Jim Johnson on one-off meetings made our board made our decision that much easier. Mm-hmm. Okay, Beth covered it all, but I'll give you some highlights. Is that our board unanimously agreed to absorb the increase, the percentage increase, and an additional 5%. And the reason we did that is because we, like you said, we could bring that into our budget with the other projects that we're going to do in that area. So. You know, we know our policies well. We'll use them to the best we can, and let's just hope the bids come in reasonable. You know, well, I don't see any reason why they're not. You know, well, he did. He got them. So mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, you know, the public hearing and hearing what the two subdivisions say. But I think the residents should, you know, maybe they don't want to pay that a little extra, but I understand. But if they look at the big picture, this is the best way to get it done, and probably won't get done in the near future if this doesn't go off. So,
and I think we talked about this before. I think you're always going to have what I see is you have three different sets of kind of camps per se, maybe with the special assessments, and there's one group that is going to want that special assessment and the road improvement no matter pretty much what the cost of the special assessment is. There's another who's not going to want it no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's a $10 special assessment, and they say it is something where funding should come from elsewhere. But that group in the middle where, you know, they want to see their road improved, it becomes a matter of what can you afford to do as a homeowner. And some, don't forget, some of these parcel owners sometimes own an additional parcel mm-hmm. next door or one and a half that they've split and built on. So it's not always just this number. Sometimes many times it's 1.5 or 2. So what we really want to do is those people who are in the middle, for the sake of, you know, well, it affects everybody, but you just, I think of them and think, okay, let's get this down as much as we can and partner as much as we can together. And it's been a really good process, a long process, but a good one.
It will invariably improve their ability to sell the home, and or their property values will go up. Not maybe overnight, but in the areas that we've done this already in our county, we've had nothing but positive feedback. Thank you. I'm going to sit right here.
Thank you. Sure, absolutely. Go ahead, Sue.
I've already been asked by some property owners in English Woods, are the stub roads still included in this new bid?
They are still mm-hmm. included in this new bid. There are basically three areas. One of them in particular we really need to. It's not a stub road, but it's that portion of Yorkshire that connects Holiday Forest and English Woods. That's important to include that piece, and it's because, number one, some of the I'm not going to use the correct technical word. We need Jim Johnson here. And, by the way, he was very willing to be here. But I went over this, and he said, you got it all covered, Beth. I said, go have a nice evening with your family. So, but he showed me where there were some, like, fractures and where they needed to address some of the concerns in that part of the road. Plus, if we don't do that part at this point in time, and then later Holiday Forest goes to get done, there is no mechanism when you do Holiday Forest to assess that part of the road unless you come back and the property owners on those corners, you assess them a second time. That's not something that you want to do, is go back and reassess the property owners. It should be included with that subdivision and as part of it, and then that will those fixes will be taken care of, and it will match right up when Holiday Forest eventually goes to get done. I've had many conversations with Jim regarding the stub roads and the other two stub roads, what can be done. But the best fixes, if you don't do all of it, shave off such a marginal amount. I think his recommendation is sound to keep the stub roads in there. The stub road that's on the east side of the subdivision as well, that again is almost in the same situation if it were to become developed. So you want to have that done with the road, with the project. So you're really talking about that one stub road to the north is all you're looking at. And for them to, again, Jim will be here at the March meeting and can go over those from an engineering standpoint, but it's a very minimal difference at that point, what you're looking at. So that's kind of a long, non-technical question to your answer that Jim, I know, can talk about in March.
Thank you.
So there is no actual motion needed on this right now. I just wanted to bring it to the board and let you know that we're still working on this and that we'll be having a public hearing about it in March. And so when you saw that public hearing, or if you had questions as letters go out to the residents, that you would be updated on what was going on, and you would have some numbers behind it and so forth. So are there any other questions or comments or anything from Mark regarding this?
I can just give a brief update. I've talked to the bond council again since we're reactivating this, and he is getting together the resolution that we need in March so that we would go to purchase a bond in May, so that we'd be ready whenever they start construction.
Okay,
since
excellent.
It's going to be done in July, timing-wise, he had some other projects that we could do them all together.
And we can get closer on those numbers for the cost. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned the resolutions, because as well, we're looking at the agreements with the Grand Traverse County Road Commission that we still need to sign. The last time that was before us in August, and we were going to have a special meeting after the bids were awarded, but before the next Road Commission meeting, and we had a special meeting scheduled to turn around those documents. Mm-hmm. Those documents, in preparation for that meeting, which didn't happen, went from the Road Commission to our council. Our council had one or two small comments, but ones that we want to address. And so we'll be getting that done and wrapped up in time for bringing them back to our March meeting. So then they can go from us to the Road Commission. So.
And just a quick question. The amount that we would be bonding is the township portion and the residence portion, not the Road Commission portion.
We're not bonding the township's portion.
Okay.
It would be that...
Just the residence portion.
Right.
The amount... There's an amount financed on there that goes straight across.
Okay.
So basically, the total amount would be just under $1 million, $965,000.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you take the total construction cost, add in your bond cost and your administrative costs. You take out what the Road Commission is putting in the township, and that basically leaves you with what's to be financed. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's see. Oh, number six, we have the HC, which is the employment manual. You had 6.7 on there, and that was related to the documentation for an injury.
Yeah, I pulled this, and I was just wondering why we removed the supervisor needs to do the paperwork within 7 days.
Because it is all identified on the paperwork, the requirements through the, I'm trying to find where I put it here.
It's on page 37.
I know, I read it. I just was wondering why it came out of this part when it's in this one.
Is that in front of the balances here? In front of the disposal. Got it. Just balance. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the revised one says an employee shall report immediately or as timely as possible to their immediate supervisor any injury, including disease, which will arise out of the employment. So we're using the WC-100 and the MIOSHA 300 and the 300A. This isn't your question, but let me just the form 301 that was in prior is replaced, and you're allowed to use the WC-100 in place of the 301. So that's why that doesn't appear. And within 7 days after receiving it, because I believe, if I remember correctly,
it's right on the top of the WC-100.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why it's not in there. It's by nature of how the form needs to be done anyway that I didn't put it in there.
I think that it should be in there just so that anybody looking at it and just the policy manual understands that there's a timeline.
And they might change the document. Because they like to do that.
So the directions for the WC-100, you can see that Section A, put them right in there. Within seven calendar days, you must fill out these questions.
I understand that, but is the WC-100 in the policy manual?
No.
It is. It is. The WC-100 is listed here in the policy manual, right here.
No, is the form in the policy manual?
Yeah, it will. Mm-hmm. See attachments form WC-100. It's the proposed employment manual Appendix F. So what used to be in the employment manual was kind of our version of the same thing, kind of the simple sheet. Well, when I looked at it, I'm like, this is the exact same thing of what Lara asks you to fill out. So there's no sense in having two of them. So use what's required by the department. And that will then now become our Appendix F. This was our Appendix F, is what the township has to fill out. This, which has the directions, will now be in the Appendix F in that employee manual.
I guess I'm alone, but I just feel that in the policy manual itself, it needs to have that 7 days identified so that it's glaringly obvious.
There's no pockets for discrepancy.
Yeah, I guess, and that's fine if we want to pass it that way. I guess I would just say if the department ever changes that from 7 to 14 to 10 or whatever,
then our policy is
automatically consistent with what the department recommends or requires.
I understand where you're going, but I just know that when you're looking at, or maybe it's just me, when I look at the policy manual, I look for those things, you know, when you read your policy manual and you don't read all the appendixes because that's all the fluff, if you will. But, you know, if there it says 7 days, it's right there and you're going to flip to that form and get it going right away.
Right. And I guess I'd just say when you're going to be doing that and the 7 days kicks in, it's because you're filling out that form. So you kind of by nature have to look at the form anyway. So, and it just keeps it consistent. But either way is fine. Either way is fine.
The top of this is this one, right? This is the one we're adopting, correct?
The WC-100, yep.
Okay.
And then the second page is it on the right that has the directions that goes with it.
Okay. Okay, so this one says within 7 calendar days after you receive information that a recordable work-related injury has occurred. What happens if you don't receive that information from the employee until day 6 and it's Friday?
I'm saying that
if you have it in there that I'm in agreement with what she says based on the terminology that's here. It says 7 days, but it says within 7 calendar days after you have received, that we as the employer have received, mm-hmm. not from when the injury happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Is that not different?
Well, if you include it in here, right now it says, that's exactly what it
okay.
said before.
All right.
Within 7 days after receiving.
I just.
Yeah. Again, it's neither here nor there. We're gonna adhere to it anyway. So I'm fine whichever way the board wants to pass it. Someone just needs to make a motion, and but I guess I left it out for so that we're pointing to whatever Lara declares as
and
policy. We're automatically
going to have
it.
C Appendix F in there, so that yep, it does.
Yeah,
excellent. Okay, well,
I guess maybe we need to have that bolded.
I just have but worked with enough people that hired that there's.
Well, and it's the immediate supervisors
yep.
that are filling it out, which there aren't that many in this.
Right, and there's not many.
There's one.
Okay, that's fine.
Or two.
Executive.
So I guess I'll make the motion that we adopt consent agenda item, update to the employee manual, as recommended. Not that I don't understand your point, but I've also run it through legal counsel. They're good with it, and that keeps us from having to update it if they change their policy, would be my rationale. So, is there support for that motion?
I support.
Okay, motion's been made and supported. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no?
No.
No.
So we have a 5-2 vote with Henschel and Walters dissenting. And motion passes. And we're at the point of public comment. So if there's any public comment, feel free to come up to the podium and state your name and address and speak to the board on any issue. We're happy to listen to it because we're at 8:30, which is not too awful bad considering all of the topics that we looked at.
Well, thanks for the discussion, deliberation earlier on the short-term rentals. I don't think you guys probably know this, but I've owned property in Florida for almost two centuries now. No, two decades.
Two centuries.
Well,
you look fantastic.
Long time. Yeah, I was there when the standard showed up. No, but about 20, 25 years, and this will be the third year I've been on our board down there. And it's quite a place. And part of the reason I got on board was to preserve the quality of the property and the residents for everybody that enjoys it. And we do a Friday to Friday check in check out week it 1 week. That's it. It's standard, and there's ordinances on the island. That's exactly what it is for everybody. But you can rent for a day if you want, but you get it 1 day in that week. That's it. Traffic's an issue. The in and out's an issue. It's a lot going on. And quite frankly, if people are into the business, and the people that are in the business of the rentals are going to simply comply and benefit in terms of how this is structured, guaranteed. They'll know exactly how to make money. They'll know exactly how to do it. And they're the ones that have the good renters because they come back again and again for years after years after years. Okay? I think you definitely got to have some minimum stay in there. You know, three. I wouldn't go below three. I kind of like the five and up. But the fact matter is that you'll have an enforceable ordinance. Okay? Concerning septic, give you an idea. When we were looking at our place, it was a seasonal place at the best. And I actually got hold of the county health department before I bought it, and I had them come out and inspect. Butch came out. We inspected, looked at it, and we had what I call the floating septic tanks. They literally were moving, filling up with water, draining out right into the river directly. One of the deals we cut, we were buying it from, was to fix that, please. Not required. Health department wasn't going to require it. We spent $22,000, folks, to make this happen, to preserve the quality of the river. Now, conversely, across the river, there's about a 3-acre lot with a 800 square foot cabin on it, on the rise, up on the ridge, that is on average got 4 to 12 people there. Last summer they had 12 people in this place. Okay, it's got one bedroom, 800 square feet with a holding tank. So there's a problem there. On top of it, you can stand on my property and the springs come out below the property of this place, four foot down, and come right out of the side of the hill, flow down in the creek, directly into the river. If there's a catastrophic problem with that tank up there, it'll be hours before that's contaminated in there, right into the fresh water stream. So I appreciate that you guys are looking at the septic systems. I appreciate you're looking at the time period. You know, the reason I got on my board was to do the deliberations just like you guys are doing in terms of how do we structure this so that it's the benefit of everybody. You got to compromise sometimes, but there's certain things I don't want to compromise on, and that is that the quality of the water, quality of the value of the land, intrinsic value of the land and why you're there, okay, and personal respect for my neighbors. So I'm going down there. I know my neighbors there. They are my friends. I dine with them. I sit at the pool with them. I walk the beach with them. Okay? Here, I don't have that benefit. My neighbor came down and said, hey, we bought this place so we could be on the water. Great. Hardly ever there. But boy, they got the rentals turning over a day at a time. So I look at what I did with my $22,000 and for the water and the property and the value and everything and all the other money I put into the place. Now look what this person's doing. This person is not the person that's going to see how to run it like a business. Not the property owners that have millions of dollars invested on their waterfront and lakes and streams. This is the person that precisely is going to get hammered because they're not doing the right thing. So I encourage you to go through with the motion at the next meeting or whenever you do it, put some teeth into it, and then I, as a property owner, will assist you on the enforcement. Thank you very much.
Did I tell you I was getting my direct line taken out and I'm using the general township line now? Any other public comment? Hi, John. How are you?
Good evening. John Syke, 507 Devonshire Court. I just wanted to thank Supervisor Friend and the entire board for the appointment to the Planning Commission. I'm looking forward to serving the people of the township.
Good, very good. And I think they're looking forward to having you as well. Hello, Mrs. Gonzalez. How are you tonight?
Hi, I'm Nancy Gonzalez. I'm back. You all know that I feel that we shouldn't have short-term rentals whatsoever. However, the fact that you seem to be listening somewhat to some of us and are even considering a minimum stay, I'm grateful for. I would like to encourage you to look at the 7-day stay. I personally, and this, you know, checking with the rental companies, I don't care. They don't want a minimum. They're there to make money by renting properties. The more properties they can rent, that's what they're in business for. They don't care about the homeowners next door. The other thing I would just like to point out is that all of the surrounding townships either don't allow short-term rentals or have limits. Like Traverse City is only in the commercial areas, Peninsula and Garfield not at all, Acme is only in certain areas. So I think if you go lower than 7 days, you might as well not print that beach district sign and just make it short-term rental, because I think that's what it's going to be. You're going to have all kinds of people investing in homes here to make them short-term rentals. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment tonight? Okay, not seeing any other public comment. Anything else from the board? If there's no objections, then we stand adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for the trees.